Welcome to the Riverside Project podcast. We are mobilizing Houston to empower families and transform generations. We hope these conversations will give you a greater understanding of the issues facing our community and inspire you to find your place along the river. Today we have Travis Hand joining us on the podcast. Travis is a licensed master social worker and currently works at Texas Children's Hospital in the Department of Behavioral Health. Travis emancipated from foster care at the age of 18, just before his high school graduation. One of the first in his family to go to college, he graduated with highest honors in research and international studies from Lone Star Community College, which then allowed him to receive a full scholarship to the University of Texas at Austin. He then graduated from UT with high honors with both undergraduate and master's degrees in social work. Travis has spent several years since then working with first-time college students who have been involved with the foster care system. Through advocacy and personal experiences, he was able to form the first-ever former foster and adoptive youth leadership organization at UT. After college, he spent several years working with domestic and sexual abuse survivors at the Houston Area Women's Center before then being hired at Texas Children as the first behavioral health social worker. Travis, what a remarkable journey you have been on.
Thank you.
My goodness. Thank you for being with us today and just sharing a little bit about your experiences and your journey to get where you are today.
It's my pleasure. I'm really honored to be here.
Of course. Well, let's just get started. I'd love to kind of start off with just your role right now. So you're at Texas Children's working as a behavioral health social worker. What do you do there? What is your kind of day-to-day look like and who do you serve?
Yeah, so the day-to-day is very interesting because you never know what it could be like. But ultimately, me and my team, we are there to support patients, kids, and teens and their families that come in that might be struggling with thoughts of suicide. They may be struggling with some behavioral issues. A lot of our kids might have mental health diagnoses or be experiencing a life living with autism or mm-hmm. intellectual disabilities. So we're really there to try and help the families understand the mental health system, mm-hmm. keep the kids safe, and help them understand that they aren't a bad person for their thoughts and their feelings.
Yeah. Do you work with a team there? What other kind of clinicians do you work with in that role?
Yeah. So it is a whole team. We are made up of care coordinator, which I have to give a shout out to our care coordinator, who is phenomenal with what she does. We have clinical nurse coordinators who are there to help when patients start getting a little aggressive. They're here to kind of keep the patient safe and the staff safe. We have directors. We have people that have been working in inpatient facilities, mental health facilities mm-hmm. for 20 plus years, if not more. So it's really a large team. We have registered behavioral technicians that work a lot with our kids with autism, and they are phenomenal. We have psychologists, psychiatrists, everyone.
Gotcha. Well, as I mentioned in your bio, there's a lot of different experiences that mm-hmm. led you to get to that point. So I want to come back to your role again, kind of towards the end mm-hmm. with Texas Children's, but I want to also go backwards too and find out a little bit about what got you to that point. And you can go back as far as you like, but I would assume being in that space, having a background, having the experiences that you've had with the foster care system, having experiences with personally, but also in your work experience, all of that has really helped you in this role.
Yes.
Where did kind of that passion start? If you want to kind of go back as far as you'd like to go, where did that kind of come from? Where did that start?
So, I mean, I grew up in foster care. I did live with my biological family for about the first 10 years of my life, and it was a hard time. And most of it I don't really remember, but I do remember being a kid with a lot of compassion. I really wanted to be there for other people, mostly because no one was really there for me. And so I wanted to kind of be there for people. But where I am now, it really was a long process. I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life when I ran away from my foster home the second semester of my senior year of high school, completely lost, no idea what to do. It was a a teacher at that time who had kind of passed me in a class that I should not have passed, which means I shouldn't have technically graduated. And it really got me thinking about people that are there for me, even though I may not realize it. I was full of a lot of anger and regret. And then for the next few years, I kind of went down a spiral of statistics of foster youth, lots of drinking and things that I shouldn't have been doing. But at the same time, I was trying to figure out who I was and what I wanted to do. And when my father, my biological father, became sick and we knew that it was time that he was going to pass away, I was there for him. I did everything I could to support my grandmother as far as taking my father to hospital visits and things like that. And I saw how it impacted my grandmother to have that support, have someone help, and things like that. And when he passed, my grandmother wrote me a note that said lots of different things, but at the end of it, she said, please do everything you can to get back in school. And I wanted to make her proud. And I didn't know if that's what I wanted to do, but I did. And through a lot of different experiences and helpful professors, I found the path that I'm on now. And I don't know, it's been a very interesting
journey. Yeah, you took those
journey.
Words to heart. You really went with it. Went for it with the education. So it sounds like you, even though you know, you emancipated from foster care, you did still have some ties to your biological family.
Yes, I did. My biological mother passed when I was very, very young, basically my first year in foster care. But my father did his best to try and do visitations, meet the standards of the state so that he could have his kids come over, stay a few hours. Eventually, he earned the right to have overnight visits. And so we weren't close, but at the end, we became close. And I'm very thankful for those last few months that I had with him.
Yeah, I would imagine the experiences kind of going back and forth on living in different spaces, but knowing how to interact in that space. Did you have support? Did you have other people kind of outside guiding you through? That's a very sensitive experience. Who kind
guiding
of helped
me through
you? Just being those conversations going back with biological family and were there teachers? Were there counselors? Was there anyone who's kind of guiding you along? You mentioned your grandmother was a key person.
Yeah. In high school and kind of a little bit after, my grandmother was kind of the only one I trusted to be able to give me guidance. And my last foster mom, who I owe my entire life to, who saved me, it took us a few years to reconnect. So outside of my grandmother, I really didn't have a lot of people supporting me, and I didn't want a lot of people because I was used to being alone or feeling alone.
Yeah.
But my best friend Allison and my best friend Ryan at the time, they were always there for me, and they were the ones that kind of pushed me to believe in myself.
Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about the foster mom that you mentioned? What was so significant about her role in your life?
She didn't push me to do anything I didn't want to do. She didn't push me to be anything more than who I could be. She believed in me despite all the pain I caused, the troubles that I was getting in. And even to this day, she says, oh, you were one of the easiest kids. And I look back and I'm like, oh, how is that even close to being possible? But she believed in me no matter what I did wrong. And to this day, she still believes in me.
Yeah, what a significant, what that does to somebody's self-worth and what they can accomplish when there's somebody there cheering you on
exactly.
Like that. Amazing. Are there any other experiences just along that journey while you were in foster care that you kind of point to as either turning points or something that you learned by being in that system that maybe you carry on now in your role or in your work with domestic violence victims or anything like that? Or are there any kind of key things that you remember?
I think in general, the whole experience I carry with me and bring here, I didn't really put myself in any situations in foster care that connected with people. I was always getting in trouble a lot, but I think it first started in eighth grade when I did Civil Air Patrol, which is basically right before junior ROTC, kind of the military stuff there. And the teacher at the time, whose name I cannot recall, had this odd belief in me. He always said, "Oh, you're very well put together. You're well behaved, and I see potential in you." And I think that was the first time I heard the word potential. Mm-hmm. I had no idea what that was, but I knew I wanted to impress this person as if they were like a father that I was missing in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And in those experiences of leadership and being able to kind of help other people understand even just the class that we were in, I realized like, okay, maybe I'm good at being there for people. And I think that was the biggest turning point for me. And even when I got into my next foster home and I did junior ROTC, it changed my life as mm-hmm. far as just being able to trust myself a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. I think people being able to speak those kinds of words mm-hmm. into you, it can really change the trajectory of someone's
absolutely.
Life. Absolutely.
And that trust that they put in me, I try to put that in people, in complete strangers that I don't know that are depending or counting on me to help them. That's a trust that I don't want to break.
Yep. Yeah. There's so much that's dependent upon building trust.
Yes.
Anything that you look back on during that time that, I mean, you mentioned behaviors that you know, mm-hmm. when we talk about regrets, I don't love the term regret, but is there anything that you would have changed if you could go back to the 10-year-old self, the 12-year-old self, the 18-year-old self? Anything specific that you look back and say, I wish I had gone kind of a different direction or I had done something different during that time? Or were those all just learning experiences that you
I really like that you say you don't believe in regrets, because I feel so passionate about mistakes, right? Mistakes are lessons learned. That's all regrets are they these lessons that we learn, and I wouldn't change a single thing about my life. If I do, I risk losing my best friend. I risk losing my foster mom, Lori. I risk everything, and mm-hmm. I would never want to risk what I have today.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to put it. I think that people often look back in circumstances that are difficult and say, I wish that I hadn't experienced that, or I wish I had done something to prevent that, or someone had prevented it for me. But to look back and say, yes, that was really, really difficult, but I also learned things from it and it set me on a trajectory that helped me. That's an amazing perspective.
Thank you.
So share with me a little bit when you went to college. Mm-hmm. Community college. So you graduated from high school. You uh-huh. mentioned that was a little bit rocky.
Yes.
And then you embarked on a journey towards community college. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that part of your journey.
Well, I only did it because my grandmother wanted to see someone in the family go to school. And I knew at the time, the foster care system, when you go through it, and even adoptive youth at certain ages and things like that, get a free tuition waiver. So your college is paid for as long as you're admitted to that college. And my foster mom had been pushing me for years to go to school. And I was like, no, that's not it. But when my grandma did it, I was like, fine, let me make somebody happy in my family, because I don't know what else to do with my life. And so I asked my buddy Ryan, who was at Lone Star, I was like, where's the school at? Guide me. So I did it and I was completely lost. I had no idea what I was doing. And one semester in a History 1301 class, Professor J.R. Wilson took this naive, angry child full of anger and judgment towards others, and somehow turn that kid's life around by simply saying, yes, you can. And I remember, I always laugh because I was like, the professor has mad cow disease or something, like off on tangents. We're not learning
it's
history.
It's all over the place.
Exactly. And he said this phrase that stuck with me. He said, history is not about memorizing dates and people. It's about a story. If you want to impact your own life and have people remember who you are, then tell your story. Don't let people just know your name. Let them know your story. And I remember thinking, okay, all right, let me see what I can do. And I got to be in his class and I was very upset. So I was like, I'm taking your 1302 class. And I did. And he had signed this book called Black Like Me. And it opened my eyes to a lot of the discriminations I held in my heart towards people, whether it was learned, inherited, whatever it may have been. And I remember when we did our paper on that book, and he was impressed by what I had to say about who I was and how that book affected me as a person. And he said, you know what, I'm recommending you for the Honors College. I said, no, there's absolutely no way. And I heard my grandmother's voice. She had passed at this point. And she said, why not? Why? Why not? And so I did. And I was determined to take that man's 1302 honors class. And I got an A.
Wow.
But it wasn't just that A that changed my life. It was that man changed my life by just believing in what I could be and who I could be.
Would you say that that's kind of the pivotal moment where everything kind of switched?
2015 is the year that my entire life changed and who I was as a person changed. It to this day, even we recently had Martin Luther King Day, and I like to reflect on that day about relationships with people, with myself, with society. So oftentimes I'll go back through my old research papers, and I did this research paper. It was the effect of European colonization on traditional African leaderships and economics. That paper is who made me today. Learning about other people's struggles, about learning this truth to history. And it changed me because it made me realize that the things I tell myself and the things that I'm being told may not always be that. Mm-hmm. And it's up to me to do further research. It's up to me to ask questions from people who live in these experiences. And I realized that I'm not just a foster youth kid. I'm not just a former foster youth kid. I am a person living in a world full of millions of other ideals and beliefs. And I got to travel the world, and in a community college, I got to travel and I got to present my presentations and my research. And I met so many different people from different backgrounds and different beliefs and cultures. And I realized that my identity as a former foster youth was just one identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I could imagine just the feeling of not being alone, right? There's other people, and that doesn't discount, you know, you're not saying, you're not erasing that from your experience,
exactly.
But recognizing that other people also have experiences that may not be exactly the same, but everyone has struggles and joys and different various circumstances that then kind of define their life in different ways.
Exactly. And I realized what I was causing, the pain I was causing other people by living in my pain and thinking my pain was the only pain that existed. And once I started talking to people and actually listening to what people had to say about their own experiences,
it's liberating, I think, in a way, right?
Absolutely. It was absolutely liberating. And I have a whole family of friends and professors and teachers that I am so thankful for. And I feel like I became a whole new person, like the person I was supposed to be, that was just held back by the pain that they had experienced.
Yeah. One of the things that you're kind of touching on that I feel like I've also been learning has been this, the kind of beauty of being curious about people, right? Even my own circuit, like what I'm feeling and why I'm feeling a certain way, right? But being curious about the people around me, getting out of my own head, right? I think we can all probably grow in that a little bit in today's day and age. But I think the curiosity to look around and think about what other people are experiencing and what they have experienced can teach us a lot.
Yeah, you know, there's that phrase like, oh, put yourself in someone's in someone's shoes. Words are hard today. and as hard as that might be, it's so impactful. And it really does help you see the world in a whole different light and realize that me walking down the street and what I see may not be the same that someone who's walking right alongside me sees. And that's okay. And that's unique and different, which is amazing.
Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about the trajectory from there. 2015, you said, was kind of a pivotal moment for you. And that led you into what exactly?
From there, I was presenting at conferences of these amazing research papers that I was writing in these classes that I was taking. And the professors gave us the ability to do what we wanted to do. It wasn't about, hey, this is the topic you have to stay mm-hmm. on. So I did all kinds of different things. I mean, I remember my senior thesis paper was on this whole effect of modern digital fairy tales on children. And I used Disney movies and the psychology of fairy tales, which was absolutely, I mean, I wrote a paper on Disney movies, and I wrote a paper on Star Wars one time, and it allowed me to believe in myself. It allowed me to think outside mm-hmm. of the box. And all of those experiences, I was chosen to be a mentor for incoming college students. I was chosen to give presentations at the campus. I was president of Psychology Honor Society, president of student government. All of those chances and experiences allowed me to apply for a scholarship, the Terry Foundation Scholarship, which is an amazing scholarship for transfer students. They still do it. And I was like, okay, if I'm going to apply for this scholarship, I need to know what I want to do with my life.
Yeah.
And I was applying to UT just because it was as far away from Houston, but not too far away, because I was still haunted by my memories of my past. I was mm-hmm. still burdened by my past, even though I was becoming a new person. Mm-hmm. And I think I needed to get away from that for a while. And my partner at the time agreed that we could go anywhere. Wherever I wanted to go, we could go. And so I put all of my eggs in one basket, which you shouldn't do, but I did. I applied to UT, and I remember the admission paper, and it was like, what college are you applying to and why? Mm-hmm. And I had no idea what I was applying to. I was basically undeclared.
Which one can I go to?
Exactly. And so I did the logical thing that all kids did at the time with the internet, and I Googled examples of admission papers, and I saw this one that someone wrote that was, and at the beginning of it, it said, the psychology department found me because, and I thought, okay, what found me? Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know what found me was foster care. Foster care found me, and it saved my life. So how do I go back to that? It was always a passion. I knew I wanted to give back. And so I said, the social work department found me because. And from there, I got mm-hmm. accepted to UT, and I did amazing things that I didn't even think was possible. I didn't even think I had the strength to do it, let alone
2 degrees. Yeah,
exactly. Let alone 2 degrees. I mean, spent 5.5 years at a community college. I thought I was going nowhere, even though I was doing amazing things.
You mentioned foster care saved you. That's not something that I hear very often in this space. We often hear the opposite of that. What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't want to let go of the notion that a lot of people do experience, more than half of the kids in foster care experience really challenging, mm-hmm. difficult situations. For me, it saved me because it allowed someone to actually be there for me.
Mm-hmm. And your foster mom, you mean?
And all of my foster parents, you know, I've lived in 3 different homes. To me, I consider that to be very lucky. Mm-hmm. My twin sister was separated from us. I don't know where she is to this day, but even though we experienced really hardships, emotional neglect, not being able to live with our family, and basically being called orphans growing up in school, it saved me because it allowed me a chance. I don't know if I would have had that chance with my family.
Interesting.
I don't know if my father would have given us that chance or believed in us to be able to do what we wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I can't ask him. I can't ask my mom. But I can take the experience growing up in foster care, and I can choose to say it saved me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's incredible. It's an incredible perspective to have on all of that. As you've moved into now serving others, mm-hmm. What have your experiences been? Has it been challenging to you, or was it challenging at first, seeing as, you know, you've taken this new trajectory and you're stepping in and you're serving others, and you mentioned that your past still kind of burdened you a little bit. Was there a point at which you were able to kind of reconcile that in just the experiences you're having kind of now and with serving others?
You know, I had this disabilities professor that said that people don't overcome things. They accept those things and they embrace it as a part of who they are. I think my past will always burden me in some form or another, but the trajectory really changed when I was at UT. And, you know, foster youth, it's a law that all colleges are supposed to have a foster care representative to be able to help foster youth navigate the college system. When I got to UT, the representative there had no idea I existed for almost 2 years that I was there until I was applying for internships that we had to do for school. I had applied to be a CASA worker. Unfortunately, that fell through. And I knew, and my professor at the time knew, I wanted foster youth. Like, there was no, I was taking a no-win scenario on working with foster youth. And so she had spoken to Shannon Mann Butler, who worked with the Texas Institute of Child and Family Wellbeing, connected to the social work department at UT. And she was like, do you want an intern? You know, Travis is really great. They have a passion for foster care. So she was like, sure, I'll take an intern. And when we got together, we both had no idea. We're like, we don't know how this is going to work. And I remember saying, well, I know one thing is I want to know who else is in foster care here. Who else had been in foster care? Who else are we missing, just as you had missed me, and how do we fill that gap? So she worked on trying to fill that gap, while I worked on creating a student organization for foster youth.
Yep.
And it was in that organization when we started off with maybe two people at Spark at UT, and by the time I graduated, we had 36 identifiable foster youth. And the way we were able to get them books, bedding for their dorms, we helped people that were scared and wanted to drop out their first semester. Yeah. And I know that feeling. Mm-hmm. I dropped out of college the first time before I went to Lone Star because I was terrified.
Yep.
Nobody tells you working and exactly.
It's a lot when you do have people around you helping you through that process. It's still a lot.
And I had done it alone, and I didn't want any of them to experience that feeling of loneliness and isolation. And together, me and Shannon, we created a home for these kids, a home that they could trust and feel supported. And it was in those experiences that I knew I was on the right path.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't imagine kind of being in that space with without that type of support, being at college without that type of support. And I know one of the things we talk about with agencies is, you know, when we talk about recruiting new foster families or even with churches identifying the foster or kinship families that are in your churches, we always say that that always follows support. Become a supportive organization, become a supportive agency, and the people will start to show up.
Yes.
It sounds like that's probably similar if you start to say, hey, there are resources available to you. Hey, we want to create a space for you. Otherwise, you know, no one's necessarily raising their hand saying like, hey, I'm in this space.
Absolutely.
That's a vulnerable place to be. Uh-huh. But when you say, hey, we want to create this space for you and we understand your, to a certain degree, we understand your, the experience that you're in and we want to learn from you. We want to provide some resources. It tends to be the case that they start to slowly trickle in.
Absolutely.
Right?
And it was in that, you know, college campuses, there are places where you can grab a bullhorn and just start shouting out, right? And that's kind of what we did in a way. And the two that we had started with were able to help us identify what information was missing. And within a semester, I'm giving presentations to these former foster youth and myself in a way on how to balance a budget, how to build credit, how to trust yourself, and how to take failure as a opportunity.
Yeah.
And I think that is what, because former foster youth a lot, they don't want to speak up. No one really wants to know, hey, let the world know I grew up in foster care, let my peers know, you know. And by having a few people say, yeah, I'm proud of my experience, despite what I had gone through, a lot of other people to say, you know,
give them a voice. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I too can be proud of that experience, no matter what I may have gone through.
Yeah. Do you know if other colleges have kind of stepped in and done the same thing? I would love to to believe that lots of colleges now have these types of departments. Are you aware of any others that have stepped in?
We modeled off of a lot of different colleges, and most of them were community colleges that were doing a lot for their foster youth, like San Jack College. Mm-hmm. And I don't know when it happened during my leaving of Lone Star North Harris, but they created their STAR program, which was for former foster youth.
Yeah.
To the point they invited me to come as a guest speaker one year. And I remember seeing like 10 former foster youth, if not more. Don't remember the number, but when I was standing up there and I was freely being myself, I wasn't worried about being fully professional, because my motto is, I am me. And you're going to have to take that as it is, right? So then there's a line, right? You want to still be professional and things like that. But I remember just being authentically myself and with my experiences. And I opened up about stories that I had never opened up about, experiences I never shared with anybody. But I knew that if programs like this are to take off, mm-hmm. then the kids themselves need to know they are not alone. They need to know that they have the power. It's not the professors. It's them.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make sure that they understood that. So there are other organizations out there that are doing that. And if people are at a college that doesn't have that, well, there's an opportunity to create something beautiful there. So.
Yep. You are proof of that. You're a pioneer, Travis. So as we kind of move to a close, I want to know what's next for you. What's on the horizon? You've already accomplished so many things. What do you see yourself doing in the future?
I've been asking myself that question a lot lately. I recently started working on getting my clinical license so that maybe I can kind of start doing some individual therapy sessions. And I know I want it to be with foster youth. No matter where I go, I want to go back to the foster care system. I've been seeing a lot of foster youth come through the hospital, and just in a day or two, how much their mindset can change knowing that I'm a former foster youth. And I know sometimes you're not allowed to share personal experiences for kids, and there is a line, but I make sure they understand that the person they're talking to is a former foster youth. So I'd like to do individual therapies for foster youth, but I really would like to open a nonprofit that is a transition kind of thing, where high school kids come in and they start learning how to get ready for college. They start learning about the resources available, like the Hay Center here in Harris County, or example for y'all here as well. And I don't know, go from there. I have no idea, but I do know that the sky is the limit when it comes to the things I believe in.
Yep. Just one step in front of the other, I guess.
Exactly.
What are you most proud of in your life?
Myself.
Okay.
I'm most proud of that I gave myself the chance.
You should be.
Yeah. But outside of that, I'm really proud of just all of the people in my life, the things that they've accomplished, and it gives me hope. And I'm most proud of the people that speak up. So there are a lot of things I can answer on that one.
That's good.
But really, myself.
Good. Well, as we close our time, we have started doing a last five. So just to kind of get to know who Travis is, what number one would be, do you have any hobbies?
I do, yes.
What are your hobbies?
Right now, my biggest hobby is cosplay. I've been learning how to design cosplay armor. So for instance, I'm obsessed with The Flash. The Flash is the hero that taught me not to change the past because you risk the future.
Okay.
And so I will make prop items, costume things out of foam. It's so much fun.
That
it's
is
so
such a fun. Unique hobby. I love it.
I love it too.
That's great. That's really great. Summer or winter?
Summer.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we say that and we had a freeze this past week.
I know. So, right? No, summer all
I feel the like
way.
Most people would say summer at this at this point in time. Introvert or extrovert?
I'm more introverted.
Okay.
You know, but I do force myself to socialize.
Okay. I'm right there with you. What's something that made you laugh recently?
Ooh, you know, that's a really good question. I think it's one of, we had a patient that came through the hospital, and despite the challenges that they were going through, they had jokes that I had never heard of before, and I can't repeat them, but they made me laugh. And it reminded me that even in the darkest time, humor could get people through.
Yes, absolutely. Last question.
Okay.
What's one thing on your bucket list?
Oh, I would love to go to Greece.
Okay.
I just want to experience that historical part of it all. So that is definitely on my bucket list.
Why Greece in particular? Any specific reason, or it's just something that think about?
Yeah, when I did my honors project on Star Wars, I started it by comparing a lot of things to Greek gods and the stories and the things that we kind of grew up hearing. And I realized that there's a lot of lessons in there, and there's a lot of history in Greece. And I don't know, I was like, okay, well, apparently that's the place I want to go see. So there's no really big reason why. It's just on the bucket list.
Okay. If I see you in a year or so, I'm going to ask you if you've gone to Greece yet. So I'm going to hold you to it.
Maybe 5 to 10 years, but yeah, no.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, truly, thank Travis, you. For sharing some time with us today. You are an impressive person. Not just because of your accomplishments, but because of the way that you have experienced and taken your experiences and turned them into service. I think that is a very, very unique calling that people have. And I'm really impressed to know you, and I'm glad to know you. So thank you truly for spending some time with us today.
Absolutely. I was really happy to be here, and I'm always happy to share my story. There's nothing that I usually hide from at this point in my life.
Well, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
To those listening, we hope these conversations have inspired you to find your place along the river. And we welcome you to join us in bringing hope and renewal to the city of Houston. If you'd like more information on how to get involved, please visit riversideproject.org and submit a contact form. We'll see you next time.